My name is Jonette Gay, and I'm the pastor of Otterbein United Methodist Church. I have with me today our media specialist.
Hi, Jason Burgess.
And we want to talk and we want to listen. Our faith is seen and understood in many topics. We're glad you've tuned in today to Hey Hey, anybody listening? Hi. Well, we're glad to be here. Jason, we've been having fun, haven't we, with our podcast?
Mm-hmm. It's still young, too.
That's so right. We've just started. We're in season two, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yes. We've decided that there's another season. But we've had your mission trip. We've talked about newlyweds, foreign exchange students, college life, musicians, spiritual direction, yoga. The list goes on. What else have we done?
I shouldn't say favorite, but one of the shows that I enjoyed kind of the most, one to put together and to actually collect the sound for it, because we don't often do our shows live, was the Community Treasure one, where we have here at Otterbein Church, we have Attic Treasures. It's a sort of rummage sale that we happen once a month, but I got to sit down there and interview all the people coming in, and it was really great to meet all the local community people and then sort of mix that all together for a podcast. So,
sure. Well, we chose the theme, Hey, Hey, Anybody Listening, with the song. I love that song. I remember meeting the authors of that, Richard Avery and Donald Marsh. They are a married couple, and I met them in Santa Fe. They've written a lot of wonderful songs, and it just... Hey, hey, anybody listening? Anybody care? That's what we want to be about, is to hear from each other.
Yeah. I remember the day that you suggested it. I was like stressing over what the title was going to be. And then all of a sudden we had a title and a song. So.
Yes. Well, you know, in StoryCorps, they say listening is an act of love. And that's what I hope listening will be, an act of love. We have two special guests today. And we... are honored to have Pat Lee and Mark Stoner. And I was thinking about a theme. I was thinking about from Richard Rohr's book, Falling Upward. He talks about we transcend and we include. And I think of the scripture from Matthew that says, a scribe is like a master who brings out of his treasure what is young and what is old. So it just made me think about what I include and what I hope have moved beyond. I grew up in Texas, and Texas is a can-do place. You know, that Larry the Cable Guy, although I think he is all hat and no cattle because he doesn't really have an accent, but his catchphrase is get her done. And that is Texas. But Texas also has a sense of xenophobia. So I don't want to fall back into that, being fearful of strangers, but I do want to have the sense of service and responsibility and just the can-do attitude. So I was also thinking about things in my own faith that I include, like the sense of community, but I don't want to include their fear of human sexuality. So we are in a traditional looking building with a very progressive attitude. And sometimes it's hard to know what is universal and what is cultural. And I was wondering about you. Do you have anything that you include from your younger years and something that you've moved beyond?
something that I include from my younger years is my mother would always take it, always after church on Sunday, we would go go for a hike in the woods, and include the outdoors and the environment as sort of a spiritual sanctuary, if you will. It's something that I do at home. I maintain a garden just so that I have a space that I can go to and meditate, if you will.
You don't want to lose that. That's a great thing to keep. Mm-hmm. And something you've maybe moved beyond.
Something that I moved beyond, I don't know, you were mentioning about community. Something I remember early in my Methodist church that I was in, it was very sort of, you know, this person is in charge, and they were kind of not nice to outsiders, and there was always this sort of class sort of, I don't know, it was kind of sterile there. And I mean, I really enjoy being in an open and affirming congregation, and reaching out. Like, I see we're reaching out to the people right here on the street whenever they're nearby. And I just remember early on, it was very inclusive.
Okay. So we have with us Pat Lee. I'm so glad to have you here.
Hi, Pat.
Today, Miss Lee. And I want to know a little bit about what you include as a Mennonite and what you transcend. Now, some of our listeners may think of, when they think of Mennonite, they think of the movie Witness, and they don't have anything beyond the Amish image. But since they're not from Lancaster, what? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the Mennonites are actually coming up on a 500-year anniversary.
Wow.
The Anabaptist movement broke off from the Reformation back in the 1500s. On issues of adult baptism, separation of church and state, and non-resistance, not participating in war. So they just took the Reformation, I think, a step farther. And then lots of things, of course, have evolved since that time. But and I have to say, I grew up Mennonite, and I left or stopped being active in the church when I was about 20 or 21. So my perception is a perception of what it was like as a child and a young adult. And I don't know if my perception of Mennonites would be, have been different if I had stayed longer as an adult. But I think what I really picked, what Mennonites stood for, and in my youth, there was a lot of legalism. We had a lot of rules. I think God, the focus was on judgment as opposed to mercy or grace. It was very sheltered. My upbringing was very sheltered. I went to Mennonite schools. I participated in Mennonite youth groups. My friends were mostly people from my church or my school. And there were lots of things we did not do when I grew up. We did not watch television. We did not listen to popular radio. We didn't go to amusement parks or roller rinks. There was a lot of things that were very popular through the 60s and 70s that we didn't participate in, because another tenet at by that time was to be separate and unique in the world. So it was a different way to grow up, I think, than maybe a lot of people are used to. It not in the mainstream. So on the other hand, there were a lot of very good things about being part of that church. And one of was community. It definitely was community. The other thing, a number of other things, but we were taught service, that we were here put on earth to be servants. And that whole attitude of service, and it entered every part of your life. And I think the other thing that was really important that I think I keep and try to keep is that my faith influences how I live. I make decisions about relationships and vacations and careers based on what I believe or what my values that developed through my faith. So that was something we were taught, that how you believe and that the fact that you are a person of faith influences how you live. And I think that's important. Mm-hmm. I still think that's important. One of the things I really hung on to. The other thing that was kind of interesting, my growing up years, and again, I'm not the Mennonite church. There's many, many, many different kinds of Mennonites and Amish and all kinds of varieties, because they were so earnest about their faith dictating how they live that they had all these disagreements and, yeah, you know how that goes. But there was a lot of emphasis on the separation of church and state. And my family particularly was not involved in local politics. We did not really even read that part of the newspaper, I don't think. We didn't. My parents were not people who voted, were not registered to vote. And that was not uncommon at that time. So one of the things I think I kept was I still believe very firmly in the separation of church and state. I don't think that this country, you know, should be a Christian country. I don't think my faith should dictate how people around me live and how this, how the, you know, the government operates. On the other hand, I think I've become very much more involved in the political world. You know, I have participated in demonstrations. Mm-hmm. I have written letters to senators. I have, you know, carried signs in groups of people. That would have been unheard of when I was growing up, not just by my family, but I think by the community that I was part of. Not unheard of with all the Mennonites now. And I think, again, there's been a lot of movement in that community as well. I could talk for an hour about that.
But I love that. What's something that has drawn you to this particular church? Because you've been here since?
I started coming here in my mid-20s. My son was little, and I thought somehow he should go to Sunday school. One thing we did a lot, we learned the Bible, we memorized, and here was my son who didn't know who Noah was. How is that possible? So I started bringing him to Sunday school. And one of the first things that happened when I came to Otterbein was there was an offering on Christmas Eve for Planned Parenthood. I was just flabbergasted. I mean, that would not happen in any church I had been to prior. And I thought, wow, these people are like bleeding heart liberals. And by that time, my life of service had gone in. I was a bleeding heart liberal social worker working with children, youth, and families, and women, and teen mothers. So the support of that kind of organization just like clicked with me. The other thing that drew me to Otterbein was the music. And Mennonites and music are, you know, go hand in hand. I grew up in a church where we did not have musical instruments, no pianos or organs or any other thing like that. But we sang four-part a cappella harmony. And I came to Otterbein where there was an organ and a piano but there was music. There was lots of singing and there was familiar hymn singing. And music has always been a big part of my life. And so Otterbein kept me partly because of their would say liberal leaning theology and because of the music.
Well, I appreciate what you bring to the music you sing parts. Mennonites sing parts, and we tend to sing the melody no matter what octave it is. And I really appreciate that.
No, I was just thinking, you know, we're lucky to have Bill as the music director here. So
we're so fortunate.
Yes. Any other thoughts you have on Mennonite, Jason or Pat?
Well, I mean, I'm learning about Mennonite here just talking to Pat, so I had some very similar feelings about coming here, too. When I took the job as media specialist, I hadn't been a part of a church in a long time, and I was a little bit concerned about just randomly taking or, you know, interviewing for this job, because I had no, my preconceptions about the spiritual community was conservative, and with the, you know, current political everything, I was like, oh, this might be really scary. But
he's been a gift, right?
The day I walked in, I was like, oh, I really like this place.
Good. We're so glad to hear that.
And I think the one thing that the Anabaptist Church did, and certainly growing up, we were very exclusive. I really did think I was going to heaven and my neighbors were going to hell because they didn't belong to the church I belonged to. And there was back in that time, a sort of an anti-ecumenical kind of thought. And one thing that this church is open, inclusive. We listen. I think we do listen. And it's okay to ask questions. It's okay to have doubts. I have talked to people, friends of mine from this church, who have said, I'm not sure some days I even believe in God. And I thought, but you're still part of this community. It's okay to have those times of of disbelief or questions. And it's that inclusivity that really draws me.
Right.
As opposed to when I grew up, you know, it was either that way or the highway. And they, I mean, again, they were trying to translate what they believed and that literal translation of the scripture into the way they lived. But wow, that makes for a very small world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this church, and certainly the way I've grown as I've aged quite a bit since I was in my 20s, is it just expands your world to be inclusive and to understand that people are different from you and there's not just your way. It's not just one way.
Yes.
I agree with that. You know, it was something in Sunday schools where I was like, oh, you know, I have some sort of kooky ideas in the way that I see my spirituality. And I don't know, being able to share those and feel like people are at least able to hear them makes it possible for me to understand, you know, closer to what those things are and how they are relative to the faith, I guess.
So what I'm hearing you say is it helps you understand what you believe, not just what we believe. It helps you understand your own sort of kind of forming it.
Yes. I mean, I don't know, get trapped in your head and if you don't have anybody to, I don't know, bounce it off of,
yes.
How do you know if it has any truth in it, you know?
I like that. One of my members once told me, you listen so much deeper than I'm speaking. Because sometimes I really want to know, because I think everybody's got it in them, got the Holy Spirit in you, and you've got something to say. And so we appreciate your sharing a little bit of, so you had like head covered in the whole works, right?
I went to 12 years of Mennonite school. I dressed very conservatively, even more so than some of the people I was in school with up until the time I was out of high school. Yes. There was another belief that the Mennonite church had was the separation from the world, that you don't conform to everything around you. And so there was a lot of emphasis on that separation. And interesting, when I thought about this, I thought, you know, there's still things that I don't want to be. I don't follow every fad. I don't have to be the most popular or the wealthiest, or there's so many things around me now that I don't want to be part of.
Yes.
So that nonconformity hasn't totally gone away.
Right.
I think growing up, the nonconformity was really, you looked different.
Right.
You went different places. I think opening yourself up to, say, I want to say like books and music and other people who think other ways has been really enriching. But not following every fad, not falling into like materialism or exclusivity in like our country is the only good country. My church was very global. We did not have a United States flag in front of the church. And there was something, I think there's some value. So some of those values really carry over.
Right. I like that. It reminds me of, that was not you guys' favorite topic when we were in adult forum, but Flannery O'Connor said, I choose who criticizes me. So that idea of nonconformity, you don't have to be the trendy clothes and all of that. I think there's something powerful about I choose who criticizes me. But I also think the Mennonites have a sense of not materialism, you know, to react against. When somebody asked me what I've learned is coming from Texas about Pennsylvania Dutch, and I told this lady, I said, you guys are tight. She said, we are not tight. We are frugal. We are frugal. You are frugal. And that still stays with you, doesn't it?
I am frugal. Yes. My mother was frugal. My father, and to a, we can be frugal to a fault. We can be frugal to the point that you almost don't have fun.
Yeah.
So I think that's wrong.
Yes.
I really think there's something to be said for joy that's not meaningful or has a moral or a purpose. I don't think everything has to be like purposeful.
Like you and I love music. Valuable. We love our 70s and 80s
music.
Music. 60s.
So, but yes, frugal And I, that was a value that I really internalized. I don't have to have a new fancy car. I shop at thrift stores. I have a little house. So that value really stayed with me. And there was a lot of that thinking, I have to say, in the 70s, when I was in high school, there was really a movement in the local Mennonite church to live simply. That was a big deal. I lived on what people might consider the wrong side of town for about 10 or 15 years. And there was a block over on South Ann Street that we called the Mennonite Ghetto. I think it's still there. There's a number of young families back in those who bought houses and intentionally lived in the city among people who looked different from them and lived simply.
Yeah.
And that was a value that I absolutely still valued.
I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And when you were talking about they have their, that you grew up with a set of, you don't express the doubts, and it just almost sounds like to me Shakespeare, you protesteth too loudly, if you have to hold on so tight to something without the freedom.
My dad was certainly not, he did not want to air the dirty laundry. I felt like knowing people's flaws and gifts made people human, but we were very closed about, the church in general, about if things went wrong, that's not something that you talked about in public. No.
Yeah.
Well, so I thought God is graceful. Yeah. I have a friend who keeps saying, oh, I do. I said, but that gives God a chance to show grace.
Right.
It gives people a chance to be kind. If you don't have flaws, then.
Well, and just recently when I shared something from the pulpit, somebody said, you were so vulnerable. Well, I didn't notice that I was vulnerable. But I think there's a sense that you want to be vulnerable, but you don't want to be a flasher. You don't want to expose everything and, use the congregation as your therapist. So it's just a balance to know, how much to share. I just appreciate you, Ms. Petley. And we're ready for Mark Stoner. Are we ready for Mark Stoner?
Hello.
How are
you
doing? Welcome, Mark. I'm so glad to have you here on our podcast. And tell me a little bit about what you sense that you want to keep from something you've learned, and what is the freedom you live by now?
Well, I grew up Methodist, but I kind of feel with Pat's story, I'm kind of Mennonite once moved, because there are a lot of Mennonite influences. And I like that you said how there's a big range of what Mennonite do. You have
people. It is true,
Well, but even more so, you'd have people that dress, are in buggies. People think they were Amish.
Right.
And some of the middle things, when I grew up, there used to be black bumper Mennonites.
Oh, my goodness.
They could have cars.
Oh, wow.
But they couldn't have silver bumpers when everything had chrome on it.
I see.
Now everyone drives that way, so. But, and then you'll have very, very liberal. And my mother grew up, both my parents came from Mennonite families, large Mennonite families, which also tends to happen. And neither joined the church. My father fought in World War II. And as Pat said, Mennonites were pacifists for the most part. And my mother had older sisters that didn't join the church. And during that time, with Mennonites, there was kind of a movement to, originally, you didn't join the church till you were married. The Amish still do that. But there was a movement to kind of push that down to kind of, you're 12 or 13 is when you join the church. And big tent revivals kind of caught on in the early part, which wasn't a Mennonite thing originally, but during the early part of the last century. And so my mother, I think, spent her teenage years being at these revivals and things where you were supposed to, come up, and she resisted that all through her teen years. And then she did go to college, and her parents wanted her to join a church before she went to college. And so she had a friend that was Methodist, and that's how I think we ended up Methodist.
I see.
But a lot of the things that Pat talked about, like the frugality,
She kept that.
And in some ways, I do feel like Mennonites were ahead of their time. You know, things about, sure. There was a cookbook back then called Living More with Less,
okay. That
talked about being vegetarian, okay. and using less of the world's resources back, mm-hmm. when people really, most of them, not at all. And so I think I retain a lot of those things. And I also think some of the things I got from my parents kind of helped me through my issues. I'm a gay man. And when I was first dealing with that, even though we grew up in the church and everything, my mother was, as you can see, my mother was kind of the leader as far as talking about faith or having opinion. I think my father was more of the, you did it. You didn't talk about it.
Quiet about it. Yeah.
But she didn't accept like a church dogma. Okay. So that think that gave me the freedom to kind of examine things myself and make my own decisions about where I was. And even before, I grew up in the church, active in the youth group and all those kind of things. Went away to college. In college, I was in a chapel choir that sang at the service. This is at Penn State. And they would have a discussion over a lunch about the service and everything after every service. And that was very stimulating. And I felt like people were being real and talking about, you know, their perceptions. And then I came home over the summer to my home church. And you know how you get the different church Sunday school classes. And it was very generational. And they were trying stir that up a little bit. So they did it with topics. And I ended up being in one that was about kind of relationships and men and women. And it had a workbook that was really conservative. It was definitely God, you know, men, women, pets, scary. And, you know, farm animals. And there were just these other couples and that, you know, some of them were recently married and no one had any problem with this workbook. You know, they all took it as like the Bible too or something like that. I knew these people. I knew that's not how they reacted with each other.
Right.
You know, and it just seems so
in their life they were much more open than in
the right. But no one even brought that up in discussing this workbook.
Interesting.
You know? And it just seemed that kind of was where I started to kind of go away from the church. And I was dealing with thinking about my gay feelings and things like that and whether how that all fit in. And I kind of would look at stuff and I'm like, well, the gay side, that's my issue. So I might not be looking at it pragmatically, I guess. But like what they're saying about women, like there's no way I can believe what these people are saying I have to believe. And so I pretty much, except for Christmas and Easter, stopped going to church at that time. And then decades later, like I was in probably 50, maybe late 40s, but I had always been active in the LGBT community here. And another church, First Church here, had a Sacred Worth group that was examining how they could reach out more to the LGBT community. And my neighbor was a associate pastor there. And so I got invited to this one meeting. And out of that came a discussion with some Mennonites, other denominations too. And it was decided that we really needed a group to help any denomination become more welcoming.
And Embrace was born.
Excuse me?
Embrace,
yeah. So this group called Embrace. And even though I wasn't really religious then, I felt like it was an important thing. And through that, there was a retired pastor that had kind of was very influential in starting this whole thing, Bill Cherry, who was still like a glowing person to me. And he invited me to First Church. And I, it was a nice invitation. So I thought I would go. And at that time we had a pastor who was very welcoming. So I went to the regular, big sanctuary service, and he had a very welcoming statement right away. And then I was also asked, someone invited me into a Sunday school class. And that Sunday school class I'm still in. And it's really, your small group of people that really do talk about issues. And I just reacted more emotionally to that whole experience than I kind of expected I would. And so that's got me kind of reexamining things and going back to church. And then, with all the other issues going on with our church right now and the splitting and things like that with our denomination, it's been hard because the pastor that was there, how Methodists are, they'll bring in a new pastor, and the pastor that was so welcoming left, and the next pastor was very conservative, and now not in a, he's still a good guy and he does lots of great things, but as far as the opinion of the on the LGBT matter, we've had many discussions, and I don't ever feel like I'm listened to.
Yeah, you are not heard. Right. So what is it like to be there?
Well, it's a struggle. Mm-hmm. And we're actually, our church isn't that far from this church. This used to be an EUB, which is what I grew up as too. I would say it's being there. I feel more led by God to be there than any other thing. Cause it really,
you're a voice.
Well, there really isn't a reason, I never expected to be going back to church or being involved at all. And probably you had it in mind. Yeah.
Sure.
But, it's feeling like, well, I'm here and I kind of feel like there's a reason, and with all the denominational wranglings and things, we lost quite a few more progressive people in 2019, and it's hard to see those people go. There still are a lot of great people, and our church is struggling and trying to figure out ways to deal with the whole thing. But it's really neat to come in here and see a rainbow flag hung up.
You're always welcome here.
Right. Well, and, I feel like you actually mean it, where so many churches say, oh, we welcome all. That's what's on the placard outside.
Now change.
And, and they don't even realize that they're not really welcome. Yeah. Or that, I also feel like I said my, I think I got from my mother especially that I could examine the dogma myself. And I feel like because of that, I'm not as scarred as a lot of LGBT people have been from the church, so that it allows me to kind of stay calm and carry on, as they say.
Sure.
Whereas some people, I think they've just hurt so much that either they can't go back at all, or if they're in a situation, it just affects them so deeply that they can't deal with it, Whereas I think I can still listen to people and kind of them say their part,
Sure, you're making a change from within. Some people try to make a change from without, but you're making a change from within. And I really want to know this mother of yours, because it sounds like she never let any kind of doctrine change how much she loved you.
No, she, not at all. In fact, well, and that was an interesting thing. When I originally came out to her, she was like, oh, that's okay. But, and I kind of think she knew, you know.
Yeah.
But she said, but don't tell your dad, you know.
But she was protecting
and,
you.
Well, and he was, to me, he was kind of that Archie Bunker generation where you kind of had a stereotype about everybody. Dealing with people face to face, was always, I think, gracious and good. But it was just kind of that thing. And I think she worried a little bit, like that could be a wedge or something. And then I had, like I said, I was involved in LGBT groups here. And in 93, we were having a bus to go down to the March on Washington that happened that year. And so I knew I would kind of be out in the paper and stuff. So I had to like kind of make sure everybody knew. And so I had a conversation with my dad, and as a good Mennonite boy, he had his garden and everything. And he would, at that time, grow his vegetables and he would freeze vegetables. So one of the regular things was you'd go to visit and then he'd be, do you need any vegetables?
Oh, I love that. Oh, yeah. She brought me some today. Yeah. Oh, she still got that in her. She brought me tomatoes today.
And so I had this conversation with my dad. And then at the end, he's like, well, do you need any vegetables?
Oh, that's great.
So that was kind that of my signal. And then my...
You got to eat.
Yeah. And it was, you know, they were always very accepting.
Wow, that's
I really didn't... You know, you deal with some internal things getting to that point.
Sure.
But they were always great.
Wow. Well, I first met you, Mark, when I first got here in 2016 when you did the film, or we showed the film here at Art because your pastor wouldn't let what was it called? An Act of Love.
Yeah.
An Act of Love about Frank Schaefer, who was defrocked here in this county. And he fortunately is back in the ministry, but it was his son's wedding, right, that he did. It was about that.
Yeah.
It was a lovely film. I remember that's how when I met you. And
right.
Said,
and that
can
was
I show it here? I said, sure.
Yeah. And that film and that time was really interesting because, you know, Frank Schaefer is from Lebanon, which is not that far from Lancaster. And so during that period, when he was going through all his trials, literally, he came and spoke here, came to the Embrace group. I actually went up to when they were having the trial. And, you know, you think most lay people don't really, I think the LGBT issue, the vast majority don't even have a strong opinion. You know, most of the people are kind of middle of the road or willing to listen to both sides. And they don't always know the intricacies of what goes on in the denomination. And so that's been one thing. I felt like our congregation was in some ways being led in a more progressive direction. And it's hard to see someone kind of trying to pull things back.
We live in a societal regression time that, as Edwin Friedman said, where there's a lot of
backwards. There's a generational, like you kind of grow up thinking, oh, there's this progress that happens. Mm-hmm. And it really is much more a back and forth.
Sure.
But
sure.
I, like one of the things you said, things that you take. So I do kind of have Methodist roots that go back a little bit, kind of removed, because my great, 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 great aunt married Martin Beam, who was one of the founders of the EUB. And for people that...
stained glass right there, yes.
Yeah.
And so he was a Mennonite pastor who ended up like kind of associating with non-Mennonites a little bit too much. That was, I think, the main that issue that he was excommunicated back in the 1700s and went on to, you know, form a whole new denomination with Otterbein and others. And a couple years ago, the Mennonite Church actually, I don't know the right wording, but they reaccepted him.
Yes. Yes.
And, you know, 200 years later. Right.
Yes.
It's always easy to. So sure. It does give me a faith that things do right. work out.
Right.
And, you know, I do think
there's a pendulum that swings.
There's a pendulum, and like the, you know, I probably will butcher this, but like, you know, the arc of justice is long, but the arc of history.
Justice, yeah, it is.
It bends towards justice.
Yes.
The Martin Luther King,
yeah. Yes. We'll Google that. And, right. Yes, it does take time, but that's where it's mm-hmm. going. And I really like that. For our listeners, Otterbein is named for the EUB mm-hmm. founder, and mm-hmm. he heard Martin Beam in a, you know, Martin Beam was a country Mennonite farmer, and Otterbein was an educated German theologian, and he heard Beam speak, and he said,
"Wir sind Brüder."
We are brethren. And that's where they got the name Evangelical United yeah. Brethren. And so there's a great rich history there. So Pat, if you can join us again, and I was thinking it was, no, you can stay. I was just wondering.
You can sit right here, Pat.
Whenever we read the book Out of Exodus, which is written by a Lancaster professor here, Daryl Stevens, what touched my heart was the fact that people felt a solidarity with others who had been hurt that had nothing to do with sexuality, like being hurt because of divorce. And you have history of that, don't you, Jason? Divorce and then are sure. hurt because of molesting. And this is... they felt a solidarity for those who've been hurt by the church that had nothing to do with sexuality.
Well, and I think the one thing that you talked a little bit about that I did not was the role of women in the mm-hmm. church. And I grew up in a church where women were not to speak. Now, there were women behind the scenes, my mother and her friends, who were powerhouses, I have to say. But women were not to speak. And not long after I came to Otterbein, we had a woman pastor. And it was just fabulous, you know, to know that you're in a place where, regardless of your gender at birth, you have a voice. At my church, when I was a young adult, I believe, there was an election for a Sunday school superintendent. And one of my mentors at church was a woman who was an educator, taught school all her lives, ran the Bible school in the summertime, but because she was female, was not eligible to be the Sunday school superintendent. And instead, we elected a farmer who knew a lot about farming. He had lots of gifts, lots of gifts, was a very successful farmer, not a very good Sunday school superintendent. And I was 19 or 20 at the time, and I just thought,
That's it.
So it just felt like at that time, even I was the daughter of a preacher. I was the preacher's mm-hmm. daughter, but I was never going to be able to stand up in that pulpit and say anything about what I thought about anything. And yeah, I don't think of that as a right. hurt, but that certainly is what sure. separated me
sure.
from
well, and it's
that
funny.
Community.
A story about the role of women. I do like history and had looked in, like, I can search the old newspapers now to see what. Mm-hmm. So I was looking for stuff about First Church that I go to, and one of the services that was, they did an article about, the one comment they had said was, it was so nice to see so many men there, and you just got the idea that what was really people were used to is the women being the main, you know, the main attenders of church
Coming
and
church,
everything.
Yeah.
And this is like around, I think, 1870 or something like that. And it was, it's funny. And I feel the same way about LGBT people and all they gave to churches, mm-hmm. and never were recognized for.
Right. Yeah, I read in a scripture recently that Jesus fed the 5,000 and women and children. And one of my members looked it up. He thought I made that up. He thought I added that. He didn't know it's actually in the Bible and women and children. They don't even count. But that's wonderful. I appreciate being a female pastor hearing that positive words about that, that we all count. Yeah. That we women.
Well, and there's a recognition of gifts.
Yes.
You know, you read and we read and we memorized, you know, the verses that talk about everybody has different gifts. People can do this, that, and the other thing. But then when it came down to, again, when I was younger, there are some churches still, I have relatives who attend churches where the woman's place is in the home. And you are expected, if you want to have a career, you don't get married. You don't get married. If you get married, you have children. Unless there's some physical reason not to. So I remember having this discussion with my relative about, but what if you have gifts? What if you have the gift of healing and want to be a nurse or a doctor? You're totally forbidden to have any kind of intimate relationship or choose to be childless, God forbid. I mean, it was just like these roles were so prescriptive that I thought, well, what about the gifts? What about right. What, you know, Paul, who's not my favorite apostle, what he wrote about
right.
people and their gifts. So, you know, those are the discussions and the freedom, I think, that comes with this place as opposed to places where I came from.
Yes.
Well, I understand we have like 3 minutes left before they're going to cut us off. So.
Do you have a word for our listening audience that you wanted to say from this experience today?
Can we go first, Pat?
No.
No.
I do not.
I would just say keep the faith, I think. Like, I think anybody, any generation faces issues. You know, they face the issue of slavery and the church dividing them, and people, I don't think, realize how accepted slavery, even in the North, right. You didn't want to be one of those radical abolitionists. You know, that was a little too far to go.
Yeah.
And times change, and you just have faith that there's a plan and it will work out.
And I would say God is a God of grace, that you need to extend grace to people who you don't like or people unlike yourself, that God extends grace, and we have to just live in community where there's acceptance, where there's listening, where we recognize that we have a God who is graceful.
That's a great ending. And we want to thank you for listening to Hey Hey, anybody listening. So glad you were with us today. And I hope you'll tune in again as we listen to one another.